Is downtown Jacksonville suffering under a 50-year curse? That's what Shad Khan said. Good Monday morning. We're live from Studio 5, and I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening to First Coast Connect today. Just ahead, a look at downtown's future. There's a lot happening, actually. We're going to speak about it with DIA CEO Lori Boyer, and you can join us. It's 549-2937. Give us a call. Then later, speaking of the NFL, the Jaguars Brexit out of London with a big loss. Culpepper has a look at that. That and more coming up this morning, but first this hour, ahead of the Jaguars' Sunday game in London, team owner Shad Khan referenced what he called a 50-year curse when it comes to the development of this city's downtown. Khan said he's hopeful that his plans to develop the area around the NFL stadium, Lot J as they're called, will help downtown take off. At the same time, there's much speculation on who might redevelop some 9 full city blocks of downtown that have been put up for sale by the First Baptist Church. And despite Khan's remarks, it's important to note there is a slew of projects underway in the city's urban core. We are talking downtown today, and we are pleased to welcome Lori Boyer, CEO of this city's Downtown Investment Authority. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Melissa.
Thanks for being with us. What are your questions for Lori Boyer, who heads up the DIA? What are your thoughts about developing downtown? Call us now, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, and our Facebook page is open. Well, lots of downtown news to talk about, but let's begin with the big elephant in the room from over the weekend. What's your reaction to Jaguars owner Shad Khan saying he thinks he might be able to reverse what he called a 50-year curse on downtown Jacksonville? That raised some eyebrows.
Well, to say the least, I was disappointed in that. As a major investor in downtown and an important player in the redevelopment of downtown, I look for a positive, supportive attitude, and you know that was a concern as it was expressed.
He said, Mr. Khan, that he wants to book more big concerts into the football stadium, and that downtown hotels need work. That big wigs flying in expect a higher class hotel experience, which he aims to provide, along with developing Lot J with nightlife and condos and entertainment. What were your thoughts about that aspect of his criticism?
Well, with respect to the, you know, potential for Lot J and additional concerts, I think that's wonderful. The idea that we would have a really activated area near the stadium, it's a great project mm-hmm. in concept. But the criticism of hotels, I take exception with a bit. Clearly, we don't have a Four Seasons or something of that type here. But we also have occupancy challenges, and I think we have some very nice hotels downtown. So I'm not nearly as critical of what we have available.
It's 549-2937. What are your questions for Lori Boyer? She's former city council member and president and now CEO of the Downtown Investment Authority. And so as Khan proceeds with Lot J, how do you see his plans fitting in with what you're doing at the DIA to develop some of the other big hot spots downtown?
I think Lot J is a critical piece, but it, on its own, I don't think it's the only thing we should be focused on. And as a result, we're focusing on the Courthouse City Hall annex site. We're focusing on the landing. We're focusing on adaptive reuse of other historic buildings in the core. We're working in La Villa. You just heard the announcement last week of the FIS building in Brooklyn. So there is a lot happening. There are mm-hmm. new developments on the South Bank as well. And all of those create the energy and vitality we're looking for. I don't think it's any one piece standalone.
Right. There are so many moving parts that you just mentioned. Let me get your thoughts on a few of those, beginning with the Jacksonville Landing. What's the next move there for the city?
So we, as you know, we have the Courthouse City Hall annex site out for bid mm-hmm. right now, mm-hmm. and those bids close in January. So our hope is that during this cone of silence period on that bid, we can really start to get to work on the landing. The landing demolition is expected to be complete in the spring. And between now and then, we will be pulling out the old study information and charrettes that were done several years ago, looking at those designs, deciding whether we need to actually hire a consultant to update those designs before we go out into an RFP status on the landing. But you should expect that we'll probably be doing something like that by summer. The mayor's very interested in the architecture of the site and wants to see something iconic there, mm-hmm. as well as we are committed to an activated riverfront plaza and a connection for both the Riverwalk and Laura Street. So there are a number of parameters that would be built into any RFP, but beyond that, we're trying to figure out how to ensure the iconic architecture, and whether that's an architectural competition or maybe just scoring criteria in the RFP, we're working on the details of that.
You've advocated for greater downtown density as chief of the DIA, more apartments, just more bodies coming into the city center. How big a priority is that under your leadership, and how do you plan to move that goal forward?
It's a huge priority. We've looked at the 10,000 residents number as a threshold at which downtown becomes self-sustaining. And downtown can then support restaurants, downtown supports entertainment venues on its own when you get to that many residents. Maybe the number is now 11 or 12. It's somewhat of a subjective criteria. Mm-hmm. But when I speak to density, I'm not just speaking to the total number of residents downtown, but also the density on any particular piece. So to my point, surface parking lots or low density residential development uses up land, but doesn't get you much in the way of either residential use or commercial office space. So what we're really looking for are more dense developments on individual sites.
How do we stop a landlord from doing that? The example I've brought up on this show a few times is the demolition of the old Greyhound bus station disappointed and upset a lot of people, particularly the adaptive reuse crowd, who I know you've heard from. They've been critical of all of these downtown demolitions. They would have liked to see that old bus station saved and, you know, maybe repurposed into something new. There's a parking lot there now. What kind of mechanism can city officials like you and others put in place to prevent anyone who buys up a property doing something like that, which is, you know, it's just another empty lot, really?
So that particular site has been cited by code compliance. And I can tell you that the developer has come into my office and showed plans for a 54-story tower.
Really?
Yes. You know, there are ways off from that, and I don't know if that will become reality. But the answer to your question of how do you prevent those demolitions is if mm-hmm. structures are truly historic and go through a historic designation process, then they're in a different category. And that process allows a vetting, a decision by city council, a decision by the Historic Preservation Commission as to how valuable the particular property is. And Greyhound's a good example. Mm-hmm. That was a one-story, fairly low density on that site building. Questionable how historic it was or wasn't. Even if you did adaptive reuse of that building, you don't get much density on the site as you would if you have either mid-rise or high-rise, either office or residential or some combination.
Now that brings me to the other big question I know many have asked you about. The First Baptist Church decided some months back to sell off 90% of their downtown property. We're talking about 9 full city blocks. It's a huge opportunity for your agency and for some private industries that might seek to redevelop those blocks. Can you bring us up to date on where things are with that sale, who might be interested in what you'd like to see done with those blocks?
I don't have a lot of detail about where First Baptist is. I know that I'm hearing a lot of folks have been contacting them from out of state and expressing interest in the property. I know my comments have always been that before the property is parceled out in individual blocks, I would like us to be able to have the opportunity to look for some users that might need a multi-block site. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about a medical innovation campus. There's been some talk about bringing a law school downtown or potentially a med school. There are a variety of potential users that need more than one block. In most other circumstances, that's about all we have.
Mm-hmm. So it looks like maybe an academic player could be the suitor.
We've always thought that would be great downtown. Or when you talk about those innovation campuses, they tend to be more tech and research rather than necessarily higher education. Mm-hmm. But they also tend to be on neutral ground, not on any particular medical facilities campus.
Okay, lots of calls. What are your questions now for Lori Boyer? She's CEO of the Downtown Investment Authority. Give us a call. Your chance to connect. What are your thoughts, comments? What do you think should be done with all of these downtown properties? 549-2937. Jason is in San Marco. Hey, Jason, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa and Lori, and I really appreciate your show and giving us a chance to weigh in on what's going on downtown. I work downtown. I just have a few comments, and then I'll listen off the air. Number one is I think we're putting the cart before the horse here with this Lot J development. I think it is a very poor idea. There are environmental issues underneath that parking lot that we don't even know about. This is not the central business district. This is not downtown. I also really get offended that we're kind of bending over backwards to let Shad Khan pull the strings for downtown. I'm making sure everyone understands the guy does not live here in Jacksonville. His residence, as I understand it, is in Naples. I think we're making a mistake here to let a guy that doesn't even have his homestead here in our county, in our area, to be pulling the strings. I think if we took half the money that's been pledged to the Lot J project and invested that into our central business district, we would have the hottest downtown in the Southeast United States. And then we could deal with Lot J. And I also want to say, you know, Lot J is this, it's a very special enterprise tax zone down there that's been changed in the last couple of years. And it allows billionaires like Khan to come in and do a lot of things and get a lot of special and preferred treatment that isn't being allowed to other places. If the entire downtown central business district had that same tax zone, we'd be doing a lot more downtown. And once again, thank you for letting me weigh in on this subject.
You're welcome, Jason. Okay. What about the pushback that we hear from some folks around town when it comes to how much money the city has given Shad Khan and his influence over all of these issues that we're talking about?
So I'll respond to a couple things in the Jason's comments. First of all, he's right about the brownfield and environmental issues that may or may not exist, and they're doing some soil testing on it now. But I'll tell you that almost all of downtown has a similar situation, and we find that in La Villa, we find that everywhere. And so it's just a challenge with developing downtown. Secondly, I agree with his focus on the core, and I am focused on the core. With respect to the Courthouse City Hall Annex site, we had over 130 pre-marketing prospects.
Wow, that's contacted. Quite a few.
It's huge. The interest in the core is significant, and I'm working on a major initiative to create two restaurant districts, one kind of Hogan Laura running from City Hall down to the landing site, and the other one in the Elbow. And I think that with some concentrated incentives focused on restaurants, bars, those types of facilities in that area, you can create a walkable corridor. And my goal is to have free parking at the Ed Ball Garage and the Yates garages at night, so folks wouldn't have to worry about parking or walking a long distance to get to those. But I agree with that focus. As far as Lot J being the center of downtown, I don't think it is. But I think it's a part of downtown, just like Brooklyn's a part of downtown. And if we can do things to energize all of downtown, there's value in that.
You see it as all connected.
Right.
So tell me more. This is the first I've heard of this. Really interesting that you're trying to develop a couple of different restaurant districts. I'd like to hear more about that. And also, Councilman Matt Carlucci, he's been pushing to replenish the Downtown Preservation Trust. Would those dollars go toward these kinds of efforts that you're talking about?
So with respect to the Downtown Historic Preservation Trust Fund, while I was on City Council, we approved a number of historic preservation grants that did not have funding in the trust fund, and our policy decision was to fund them in the year in which the funds were going to be required. Just don't encumber the funds two or three years early because some of them may or may not happen. And I still think that's a good use of funds. Plus, it doesn't communicate a limit to the amount of money available. It doesn't have a dollar amount attached to it. So that's kind of where I stand on that. But in terms of the program we're looking at for the restaurant zones, those would perhaps in some cases include historic preservation funding, but more likely it would be retail enhancement dollars and facade grants. And so what we're doing is looking at how we had a meeting recently with some restaurant operators, with building owners, with retail brokers to talk about where are the shortfalls. Is it an operating issue? Is it a tenant build-out issue? Where do you need our help to convince you to locate downtown? And in fact, I got an email from one of those restaurant operators a few days later saying he'd signed a lease.
Wow. Like, so what are they telling you? What's the biggest obstacle?
Biggest obstacle is tenant build-out costs because they're significant. You take an old building that doesn't have proper vents and grease traps and things like that, maybe was used as some other type of retail use, and now you're trying to retrofit, adaptively reuse it for a restaurant. It's an expensive build-out.
The Cowford Chop House is a prime example. They spent a ton of money trying to turn that place around and did a beautiful job, but you've got to have deep pockets.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to Rusty on the west side. Rusty, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me, Council President, as well. So, Mr. Khan's comments, he says a 50-year curse. And, you know, he's not wrong, because another way of saying the same thing is that sprawl continues and that we're still dealing with issues that came about in the 1950s and 60s with automotive engineering. The most current example is First Coast Expressway, which, you know, is transforming Clay County and will transform St. John's counties. And those aren't even our county. But they, you know, there's growth in that direction out towards Ponte Vedra. So back to downtown, though. What do they have in common? There's Springfield, which is a sustainable sort of walkable turn of the 20th century neighborhood. So how about downtown in Springfield? Well, that's Main Street. Main Street in Springfield is kind of trying to recover its charm, whereas in downtown it's kind of a highway and crossing another highway, which is Union and State. So I wonder if you think that Main Street might be an avenue for desirable development.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks, Rusty. And you know, as a Springfield resident, I can share there is a lot happening on Main Street. But what about his question?
So unfortunately, Main Street probably is not high on our list for activation in the core of downtown. We are looking, and I really want to advance the two-way street conversion initiative that was part of the CRA plan adopted years ago. But we're looking first at Forsyth and Adams, and then we already have Laura is two-way. Hogan Street has in the CIP a cycle track, eliminating one lane and having a cycle track that would connect Springfield to the Riverwalk, which I think scheduled for 21, which will be part of the Emerald Trail system, which will be a great asset to connect Springfield downtown. Mm. But in doing our two-way street conversion, we're really looking at leaving Main and Ocean as one-way pairs, State and Union as one-way pairs, Jefferson Broad as one-way pairs, so that there are ways to get to the bridges rapidly. And
okay,
to the point, they are unfortunately almost like highways downtown.
Okay, so those will stay one-way, but you're going to convert some streets to two-way, which downtown advocates have wanted forever.
Absolutely. It's been in our plan. Everybody that studies downtowns anywhere, if you talk to the mayors of other cities, so recently Clint Studer was in town from Pensacola. He was all supportive and said that was critical to their effort. Rick Baker from St. Petersburg will tell you it was critical to their renaissance of their downtown. We're seeing it consistently that it's well accepted that to restore a downtown to the kind of active, vibrant, walkable community that it once was, we've got to go back to those two-way streets.
And you said the deadline is 2021. Is that right, to do this conversion?
Well, 2021 is when the cycle track on Hogan is scheduled in the CIP, Capital Improvement Program, to be constructed. From our standpoint, we're doing what they call turning counts, some engineering study information right now. But my hope is that later this year, we will have the funding in place in order to start the work on Forsyth and Adams. So maybe within the next year and a half, 2 years, those will be completed.
How exciting is that? Okay, here's an email for you from Bill in Springfield. Ms. Boyer, why is the landing being torn down prior to an RFP for redevelopment? There are many potential uses for the building or parts of it. Tearing down the buildings without seeing who is interested in redevelopment first is not best practice. That gets back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago. People who have reacted negatively to some of these buildings coming down in the urban core. What about that?
So with respect to the landing in particular, even when we studied it 4 years ago and I was still on city council, Mr. Slaman, who was then the owner, was proposing demolition and reconstruction of new buildings on the site. There have not been any individuals come forward from a development perspective who were willing to adaptively reuse those existing structures. So what we're seeing with the Courthouse City Hall site, I think you're going to see with the landing site. And it was kind of to the other point about the greenfield development and urban sprawl that we experience as a consolidated city. If you have a vacant piece of land, you are much more likely to get interest and creative input on what can go there than if you're constraining someone to use an existing building.
One other question for you. A former member of your board who runs a private parking service has put in a bid to manage city parking, downtown parking, and privatize a lot of it. How do you feel about that?
Well, we're in the process of doing a lot of research right now. It wasn't top of my agenda until we received that unsolicited proposal, but that has forced us into looking at the issue. I think that there is an opportunity to modernize a lot of both the parking garage mechanisms and operation, as well as the way we operate meters, incorporate apps. Some of the things in that proposal are overdue and should be incorporated. I'm really looking at the possibility of the shuttle service that is recommended in that, because operating a shuttle downtown would help us align where we have parking availability with where we have parking needs.
So it sounds as though he has a chance of winning this bid. It's possible?
Well, we will be making first a decision whether we are going to put out an RFP. We would not award on the unsolicited just as it stands. And in particular, this one has is very general in nature. So if we put out an RFP first, then the RFP will be very specific about what things we want to see someone else do or manage for us.
Okay. Anything else happening on your radar that we need to know about that we didn't touch on? Because you've broken some news here today in a few in a few areas, but have we missed anything?
Well, I guess the big news from Friday was the FIS announcement, which is major for downtown. When you talk about a 300,000 square foot office building, that is a high rise. We have not had a high rise since, I believe, 2007 or 2008. And that is of major significance, not only because of the number of employees, but a $145 million capital investment downtown. So we're very excited about that.
Well, we're pleased to host you. We thank you for coming by, and stop by again soon.
Absolutely.
Lori Boyer, CEO of the Downtown Investment Authority, joining us. A quick break, and up next, why men are taking a break from shaving this month. Are you one of them? We'll be right back.
Downtown, when you've got worries, all the noise and the hurry seems to help, I know. Downtown, just listen to the music of the traffic in the city. Linger on the sidewalk where the neon signs are pretty. How can you lose? The lights are much brighter there. You can't forget all your troubles, forget all your cares, so go down. No final place.
Don't hang around and let your problems surround you. There are movie shows downtown. Maybe you know some little places to go to where they never close downtown. Just listen to the rhythm of a gentle bossa nova. You'll be dancing with them too before the night is over. Happy again. The light's so much brighter there. You can forget all your troubles, forget all your cares. So go downtown, where all the lights are bright.
I love that song by Petula Clark. We try to play that whenever we get a chance. Okay, well, it's November, and for millions of men around the world, that means it's time to take a little break from shaving. Yeah. To celebrate Movember, or No Shave November, as it's also called, the new Chop Barbershop in Murray Hill is pulling out all the stops. Manager Shay Timmons joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
In a moment, I want to hear all about Chop Barbershop, but first, let's talk about Movember. It is the leading global organization dedicated to changing the face of men's health. I'm reading from their website here. Trying to get men to take better care of their health by tackling prostate cancer, testicular cancer, mental health, suicide prevention. And the big symbol of it is the beard, right?
Yeah.
Men just don't shave for the month of November.
No, it's like completely neglecting the whole shaving thing.
Yeah, they just let it all hang out. And I think guys really like doing that, from what
honestly,
I can tell.
I think they do. It's like that hassle of not having to do that in the morning or at night. It's just like, you know what? I don't really have to shave my face. I'm good.
Right. Now, what do you recommend for guys out there who are taking part in Movember? How should they handle the beard?
If they are taking part of it, especially if they are just starting out, always, always find like the best skincare. You still want to take care of your skin, just as well as trimming your beard. It's not just like, oh no, I'm not going to shave. Like, you don't have to shave, yes, but you still want to basically maintain what you're doing. So just as if someone was growing their hair out, I'd tell them, you know, you still want to come in and get it trimmed. You still want to make sure it looks clean. So it's all about still keeping up that maintenance, still trimming it, but most importantly, making sure you have like the right skincare.
And they can get all of that at Chop Barbershop.
Yes,
tell us about Chop.
Chop is a unique, like, pub-style, old-timey barbershop, but it has modern-day feel and services for everyone of every culture, every background. It was started by two husband and wife teams in Tallahassee, and Murray Hill is their first branch outside of Tallahassee. And we'll be opening up another one in June in the Brooklyn Station area of Riverside. It's very fun. It's very upbeat. It's just like a place you come in to relax. We have like a Wi-Fi bar. We just have everything for everybody to come in and enjoy.
So it sounds like some of the elements of an old school place.
Definitely
blended
has
with the
definite
new,
like, vintage feel, but it's still new. It gives you like a blast from the past, but you're also looking into the future at the same time. So it's pretty good.
Guys need the barbershop, don't they? They need a place where they can hang out with each other and have their guy time.
Yeah, and I mean, even if it's not hanging out with each other, just guys need that little bit of solace, and that's what we provide for them. So you come in there. We do serve a beer with a haircut.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, we do.
That'll
so
draw
they
them
actually
in.
Come in and relax. I mean, but it's more of just that taking a load off. Even though I'm coming in to get my haircut, which can be like kind of crazy for some guys, like a little nerve wracking, but they come in, they relax, they enjoy themselves. Kids, they have the free Wi-Fi bar because, you know, all kids are into technology right now. So, you know, it's a place for everybody in your family to be.
Now, you're opening at a good time because Minshew Mania has taken over the town.
Yes.
How many of your customers are asking for a men stash?
You know what? I would not be surprised if we have a good majority of them coming in and saying they want something like that.
Yeah.
Just because it's like, it's a trend. So you have like the koozies that have his mustache on there. You have shirts. So I wouldn't be surprised if you have that coming in.
It's like a throwback to the 70s in a way.
It really is, because I have not seen that mustache in a long time.
No.
And it's coming back now.
but you'll give your customers any look they like. Okay.
Yes, definitely.
Now, as you mentioned, this is coming to Jacksonville from Tallahassee,
yes,
where it really took off. You're having your grand opening in Murray Hill November 9th.
Yes.
And then another location in Brooklyn next year.
Yeah, so we're shooting for June.
Wow, you're going to be all over the place.
All over the place.
Very exciting. Well, congratulations, and thanks for promoting Movember too.
Thanks.
For all the guys out there planning to participate, take some of Shay's tips. She is manager at the new Chop Barbershop in Murray Hill, opening in a few days. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
Long, beautiful hair, shining, gleaming, streaming, flaxen, waxing. Give me down to there, shoulder length longer. Here, baby, there, mama, everywhere, daddy, daddy, hair. Grow it, show it, long as I can grow it, my hair. I let it fly in the breeze and get caught in the trees. Give a home the fleas in my hair, a home for the fleas, a hive for the buzzing bees, a nest for birds.
Well, this week it's an intimate VIP evening featuring networking and a power panel with local female leaders from across industries. I am so excited to be hosting this dynamic She Is Fierce event at True Food Kitchen. It's this Wednesday night at the St. John's Town Center. Here with more, Kelly Youngs, CEO of She Is Fierce, Inc., and Karen Coleman of Baptist Health. Ladies, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for having us.
I'm so excited, Kelly. Just a few tickets left for this really fun Cocktails and Connections event
it
Wednesday.
It is, and we really actually just released some extra tickets. So we were sold out and we released a few extra tickets, but it's a very intimate event. You know, we usually have events with a few hundred people, and for this event, we have a cap of about 50. Mm-hmm. So we are just creating a really intimate space. It's all about VIP networking. It's an opportunity for us to collaborate with Baptist and bring Jacksonville's leaders together to really get inspired by other women, but also to collaborate.
Yes, I'm excited to be taking part along with C.C. Brooks of Baptist Health, Karen Bruni Mathis, editor at the Jax Daily Record, and photographer Agnes Lopez, rounding out our power panel. Karen, tell us a little bit more about the health coaching and the exciting partnerships that Kelly has put together with you guys that the ladies will learn about.
Sure. We're really excited about the partnership. Baptist has a program called For Her, which basically gives all the women in our service area an opportunity to connect with a health coach individually, because we know healthcare, like all things, is individualized. One size does not fit all, and there's so much noise out there through social media and friends. So when you have a health issue, we want you to have someone you trust you can go to.
Exactly right. Taking care of your health is taking control.
It is. And I have to say, you know, we've been working with Baptist for a while now, and it's been really exciting. As every event that we have, you know this, Melissa, because you've been there, we are able to, you know, bring these incredible For Her resources to women live at the events, but also through our online community. And there are a lot of ways for women to connect to Baptist, of course, on their own or through She Is Fierce.
Right. And, you know, it's amazing to me that 80% of all healthcare decisions are made by the mom or the
it's
wife and the family.
It's an incredible statistic. It's believable. As a mom, I will say it's believable.
Yeah. I mean, I know it's true at my house, too. And so this is going to be a component of what we're doing Wednesday night. And with the health theme, what better place could we have chosen than True Food Kitchen?
I know.
You know?
I'm very excited personally for the delicious food. And we have some really fun cocktails and some just some special and, to your point, healthy choices.
That's right. That's right. Now, let's talk a little bit about the growth of She Is Fierce over the years, Kelly, because you started small in St. Augustine, and it has been so exciting to watch how you have grown this concept.
Thank you so much. Well, I am lucky to have you as a part of it. I'm lucky to have Baptist as a partner. Yeah, it started in St. Augustine, but as you know, my background was in international media, so I always had this desire to do something that would be meaningful for women, even before now. I feel like it's a theme that we hear about all the time, but it was kind of before that. And it really launched, you know, in an embarrassing way in my front room of my
an
home.
Embarrassing way.
In a really, you know, just in my front hallway. And it's become something that's really powerful. We have members in 8 countries. We have about 150,000 plus women who follow us around the world, and tons of women, of course, in our North Florida community who are part of our world.
Yeah, including women affiliated with Baptist Health, Karen. And full disclosure, Baptist is an underwriter here at WJCT. But, you know, this is really all about not just empowering women, but connecting women to other women doing exciting things.
Absolutely.
Growing that network.
Mm-hmm. We know with healthcare, a lot of people, when they find Baptist, it's at a really bad time. They're injured, they're hurt. And in that moment, it's not where we want to meet women. We want to meet them where they're at. So in their communities, in their schools, with their friends. So before they get to the point where they really need us, they trust us. They know who to call. They know where to get the best information. That's why we appreciate the partnership with She Is Fierce, because it opens up new doors for us as a healthcare mm-hmm. system.
Right. I mean, the whole idea of being proactive about your health, I think, is something we could all do a better job at.
Mm-hmm.
I've really tried to focus on that. It's hard. It's hard to remember to schedule all of the kind of checkup appointments that you have to do and follow through and yes. do them. But it's so important for us to do that.
It is. It's really easy to put yourself last, but your health is your biggest part of your wealth that you have. A lot of folks think, well, I need to exercise. I need to make sure I have the right clothes. My kids are doing the right things. But once you lose your health, you lose your ability to do all those things.
That's right. Mm. So this is a reminder about that. But this is going to be a way for all of our attendees to pamper themselves.
It is. And, you know, it's a fun way for us to do something that is meaningful from a health perspective that connects all of these leaders in our community and gives an opportunity for women who just get a ticket and come to get connected to their future employer, to get connected to somebody that they want as their client, and mm-hmm. to create, you know, I love the word opportunity. So to create new opportunities for people to collaborate, to come together, and if they need to connect with people like Karen from Baptist and learn more about how they can, to your point, Karen, talk about personalizing their healthcare. And from our She Is Fierce perspective, personalizing your kind of vision of where you're going.
Now, people have been able to watch this play out on our news partners, Airwaves Channel 4,
yes.
The local station. Tell me a little bit more about how that's been going.
Oh, okay. So it has been very fun. And everybody who's been watching, I hope, has enjoyed our Fresh Start series. We did a collaboration with them, specifically with Melanie Lawson, but the whole News for Jax team. Starting this spring, we did a big nomination process. We invited women all over North Florida to nominate themselves or someone that they really admired who just needed a little bit of help, a little leg up. Mm-hmm. And we got dozens and dozens of phenomenal people nominated. We chose 2 women, Kateria McCreer and Karen DeMuth. One is starting a business and the other has a nonprofit and she's ready to scale it. And over the course of the last 6 months, we've been working with them, inviting them to events, featuring them, and doing all kinds of things to just try to give them that little lift up that we all need at some point, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just watching their ambition and all of their hard work come to life has been really personally really amazing for me. And I think for women in our community, it's an example of what's possible.
Yeah. I mean, this is no knock on the guys, but men have had this kind of network forever. And what you're doing is trying to put in place the kind of formal network that women can tap into in that same way.
Yeah, and I love that you said that, because She Is Fierce is not about, to your point, knocking on guys. It's absolutely, we have lots of men actually that come in as mentors and that are supportive of women in our community. But it is about, you know, bringing women who are leaders together, helping them to get connected with each other, and specifically to also say to women who are maybe young or mid-level in their career and are looking for that next opportunity or looking to make more of an impact, whatever that might mean, to give them the opportunity to actually do that.
Mm-hmm. So this is so exciting to hear. The event sold out, but you
yep.
were able to create a few more tickets.
We're adding a few more. I think we have 5 tickets left on Eventbrite. And it's just a really intimate event. It's a little different from what we've done in the past. An awesome panel of local leaders, but also just a chance for, you know, women to come together in a really mm-hmm. kind of tight and loving environment and have the opportunity to use healthy foods and healthy drinks, but also just get connected.
Yeah. If anyone has ever been to True Food Kitchen, they'll know what Kelly means, because I think most of it's going to be out on the patio, mm-hmm. which is a really cool but smaller space.
But people will also be able to interact in the bar area, and there's a little private room there, Karen. So mm-hmm. we have to kind of hope that we have good weather.
Yes. We will. I've been tracking that weather.
Yes, because we'll be out on the patio for a lot of this, which is cool. And luckily for us, the weather is kind of cooling off a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
It'll be a good night to come out and hang out on the patio.
Yeah, and we do have that beautiful room and the beautiful bar space as well. So we've got a lot of space for people to spread out. But we have seats, and there's only so many seats you can fit. So those tickets, once they run out, are gone.
Let's talk about our panel. We have CeCe Brooks of Baptist Health, Karen Bruni Mathis, Agnes Lopez, a photographer. Tell us a little bit about CeCe.
Well, if you've ever had a baby at Baptist, you can thank CeCe Brooks. She's over that whole department, and she actually just became one of our new executive nurse leaders there as well, over downtown and also our Wolfson Children's Hospital. She's fabulous. She has more energy than anyone I've ever met. I believe she has 3 kids, works full time, and you would never know it because she always makes time for everyone. I think you'll be very excited. She has been at Baptist from the start and has moved up successfully.
Yep. And she actually joined us on News for Jax as one of our mentors and was all about balance. And I was like, if you can balance, then anybody can. We can all find a way. Oh,
very nice. Okay. Well, ladies, thank you so much. Get your tickets on Eventbrite for She is Fierce. Just a few left. Kelly Youngs of SIF, Karen Coleman of Baptist. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome back. Well, Jacksonville Magazine's first ever North Florida Floating Lanterns Festival is coming up this month. Joe White dreamed this up. He's publisher of Jacksonville Magazine. Hey, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Okay, we're a little tight on time. Tell us quickly, how is this going to work?
Okay, so it's happening on the 16th of this month. So it's a couple of days ago. We're having it down at World Golf Village. It's similar to some of the lantern events we've had, except this one is... you have little floating lanterns. Like, of course, I brought props for radio, which is great.
Yeah, they're beautiful paper lanterns.
Yes, paper lanterns, which we will float in the lake in the center of World Golf Village. And they have little lights on the inside of them. And the idea is that being around Thanksgiving, people write little messages or draw pictures and things about being thankful at this time of year. And it's an idea that we've kind of adapted. There's several different lantern-like events that are similar to this. A big one that they do in Hawaii every year on a Memorial Day, which is thousands and thousands. We have reservations for over 1,600 lanterns already right now.
Wow, it's going to be so popular.
Yeah,
you did the lantern parade, which was a huge hit.
Yep,
and so people can't get enough. They want more.
Hopefully so. Yeah, this one sold out. And then we actually ended up moving the location because we were concerned about parking and too many people showing up. So we moved it to World Golf Village.
How can people be part of it?
So you can just come out. There's no fee to There's no fee to be a part of it. You do have to purchase the lanterns, which will have some available at the event, but not many because we're really at capacity, we think, for that.
Okay.
But just to see the spectacle, we'll have food trucks and kids games.
This is right before Thanksgiving, November 16th, World Golf Village, the first ever North Florida Floating Lanterns Festival. And I'm so sorry we don't have more time, Joe. My apologies.
Okay.
Mark your calendar. It's November 16th. It's going to be gorgeous.
Should be beautiful.
Come on out for it.
Thanks.
Culpepper's up next.
Gamble Rogers was a prominent architect, and his son Gamble Rogers was a revered folk musician. I'm Ben Brookmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll talk with Bruce Horovitz, author of the book Gamble Rogers, A Troubadour's Life. We'll discuss Florida history from the British perspective and talk with state folklorist Amanda Hardiman Griffiths. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
Open enrollment is upon us once more, and if you're looking into plans online, prepare to be confused.
You'll see affordable health plans. You'll see health plan rate. You'll see a million different websites, and who knows who's running those websites.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, What the What, in today's ACA Exchanges, next time on Marketplace.
This evening at 6, here on 89.9 WJCT. I'm Jeremy Hobson in London this week, where many see similarities between the politics of Brexit and Trump.
Our country is horribly divided. It seems to have been captured by a Trumpian minority determined to drive Britain in a particular direction.
That story and the latest on impeachment and the fires in California, next time on Here and Now.
This afternoon at 2 here on 89.9 WJCT.
We're a year out from the election. Polling suggests a significant number of people are through engaging with a political system that is bent badly out of shape. And whatever your politics, that's not good for the country. How do we renew America's faith in its political process? And is it too late to win some people back? Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Sports Wrap Up with Cole Pepper is sponsored by Black Sheep, Orsay, and Bellwether Restaurants.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, the Jaguars' Brexit out of London with a big loss to Houston. Did you watch the game? Cole Pepper did. Sadly, he has some thoughts. Good morning.
And, you know, these London games, when they kick off at 9:30 in the morning, it's a different kind of feeling. It's kind of a breakfast at Wimbledon kind of thing, especially after Georgia, Florida the night before. You wake up and some of us were a little groggy. The Jaguars looked like they may have been a little groggy early on. They were never really in it. Wind up losing to the Texans 26-3. I can sum it up in three different topics here. Too much Deshaun Watson. The Jaguars were chasing the Texans quarterback around, couldn't get to him. He made play after play after play. Not enough of Jaguars offensively. Gardner Minshew with a rough day, four turnovers, and they couldn't get anything going as far as that's concerned. And some terrible officiating. I'll point out two calls in particular. One offensive pass interference called against DJ Chark on a catch that he made inside the five-yard line. Going back and looking at it, he had a hand on the back of the defender. Not certainly a push, just basically a tap on the back, they called it. That was terrible. In the NFL, by rule, you can challenge a pass interference call, but what we've learned this year is that officials don't like that rule, so they're basically throwing a mutiny against the NFL and are not overturning pass interference calls that have been made, so that's not going to happen, and Doug Marrone has learned that. He didn't throw the challenge flag. The other one, Calais Campbell called for a personal foul for leading with the helmet and a tackle. The replay very, very, very clearly showed that it was Campbell's forearm that hit Deshaun Watson, not his helmet, despite the fact that Calais' forearm is about the size of a helmet. It doesn't mean that that should have been flagged either. So just some terrible officiating. The Jaguars now 4-5 as they enter the bye week. Next up, it's the big quarterback decision. With the bye week, it buys Doug Marrone a little bit of time. He says he'll make that decision sometime over the weekend. And to talk to both Foles and Minshew about that. Remember, Nick Foles injured his collarbone on the first quarter of the first game and hasn't played since. And I think with a performance that Minshew had in London, it's probably a pretty easy choice to go back to
it's
Foles at this point.
It's too bad for Minshew, but you think he's going to go back to Nick Foles.
You say it's too bad for Minshew, but I will say this. When a rookie sixth-round pick backup quarterback comes in the first game of the season, pressed into service and goes 4-4 as a starter. Great job. I mean, you cannot ask for anything more than that out of a sixth-round pick rookie. Really, out of any rookie, for that matter. Now Nick Foles can come back in, hopefully steady the ship. We'll see how it would all go down. I think Marrone will go with Foles. I would at this point. Last week, I was on the Minshew bandwagon, but I think the performance in London was so remarkably bad that it's time to make the change back.
Our producer Heather Schatz and other Minshew Mania fans will be a little sad, but
it's not like they're sending Gardner out of town. He'll still be around. Don't worry.
That's right. Okay. Willie Taggart fired at Florida State.
Yeah, 9-12 record in 21 games. And I think back to a game I covered in Tallahassee last season. Listen, you and I talked about it when I got back from that game, the second game of the season against Samford. Here's what I tweeted at halftime of what would have been a narrow, what would turn out to be a narrow victory for FSU. I tweeted, shy of a second half rout, we may be looking at the quickest hot seat in college football history. And indeed, the seat was hot for Willie Taggart thereafter. let go after losing to Miami. Odell Higgins will take over as the interim head coach. He was also the interim head coach when they fired Jimbo Fisher. He was not given the head coaching job. I think Higgins will be given a pretty good look this time around. They'll also be looking at some other coaches. Florida State has a high standard, of course, in Tallahassee, and Willie Taggart never came close to meeting it.
Okay, over the weekend, the Georgia Bulldog fans who filled up the RV City around this very building were very happy.
Yeah, third straight win for the Bulldogs in the series, a 24-17 final. It didn't have that signature play or moment that some Georgia-Florida games do have, but the Georgia offensive line, which included Solomon Kinley, the former Reigns High School star, gave Jake Fromm lots of time to make throws, and the Georgia defense handled the Gators' offense until really the final drive of the win. Georgia now has the inside track on the SEC title game and can still cling to some national championship hopes. Mm-hmm. Florida can still have a good season. They closed the gap on Georgia, just not all the way.
Okay, last but not least, it's high school football playoffs. You're tracking 25 local teams that are in the hunt here,
right? Yeah, including both defending state champions, Reigns and Mandarin. There are four games on Friday involving two teams each from our area. The winners of those two games, in one of those, will face off against another. So we'll know that there'll be at least one team in our area in the third round of the playoffs. But I think Trinity Christian probably stands the best chance of winning a state championship in 3A, and also keep an eye out for University Christian in 2A to make a deep run.
Okay, always good to get your sports insights every Monday on this show. Catch Cole every night on TV on Channel 4. Follow him on Twitter at Cole Pepper. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Melissa.
That's our show. And thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum is our director. Today, Brady Corum is directing, however. And our news director is Jessica Palumbo, with Bill Bortsfield running digital for WJCT News. On tomorrow's show, addressing Florida's critical coastal issues. That's tomorrow. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. If you're listening to our rebroadcast tonight, keep listening for some great music. We'll see you tomorrow morning.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.